Well, thanks very much, Brent. It's nice to be here in Canberra. A little bit of entertainment over lunch. Well, it's just been my lunchtime in Canberra, running around this lake outside quite a bit. It's a very nice day to do that today, so I'm glad you're having to drag you away and come inside. I'm going to talk on the Australian bond market. It's a slightly dry topic, but hopefully it's not going to you find something of interest. So thanks very much for inviting me to talk to the Economic Society here today. So I'm going to walk you through the current state of the Australian bond market. Bond market plays a pretty important role in the financial structure of the Australian economy, and it's timely to examine its structure and functioning in part because we've got the financial system inquiry underway. So it's useful just to give you a bit of an overview of how it works and what's its current state of play. So I'll first start by providing an overview of the composition of the bond market and how it's changed in recent years. And I'll discuss some recent developments over the last 18 months or so, focusing particularly on a couple of trends that have emerged over the past year, in particular, some signs of deepening in the Australian corporate bond market, and also the pickup in securitised issuance, in particular mortgage-backed securities. And I'll talk a little bit at the end about the possible future, and in particular, the prospect for market-based financing. So market-based means using the bond market rather than the banks to finance activity, and the prospect that that might play a slightly larger role in the future than it currently does today. So I'm going to stick up a slide with a bunch of numbers on, but let me point out a couple of important ones. So what I've got, so this is comparing the bond market in 2007, so June 2007, and then where it is at the end of last year. And a couple of things to note. So if you look at the top line, public sector, June 2007, so the far right-hand column, it's about 16% of the bond market. Today it's about a third. Financial sector, mostly banks, about a third of the bond market in 2007, and still about a third of the bond market today. Go down to corporates, again, roughly the same share of the bond market. And the asset-backed securities market, though, is the one which is noticeably smaller. So 25% of the bond market in 2007, only 8% of the market today. And you can see on par MBS, so that's mortgage-backed securities, residential mortgage-backed securities have shrunk from 22% of the market to 7% today. The actual size of the bond market is obviously bigger. So it was just under $1 trillion in June 2007, it's about $1.5 trillion today. So that's, broadly speaking, the overall shape of the bond market, and gives you a very quick overview as to how it's changed over the past six, seven or so years now. And the change from the beginning of that period to the end of that period or till today has been shaped mostly by the fallout from the global financial crisis. So as the prior to the crisis, the market mostly comprised of bonds issued by the banks and asset-backed securities, and they were a bit over half of the bond market, and the public sector was a much smaller share. Now that the bond market's grown to be around about 100% GDP, so just to provide a benchmark, so $1.5 trillion is around about today's nominal GDP. Back in 2007, it was a bit smaller relative to the size of the economy, so just up around 85%. So the bond market's grown a little bit relative to the size of the economy over the past 7 years or so. And that's mainly been the result of increased issuance by the Commonwealth and state governments to finance, as they sought to finance the deficits, as they sought to support economic growth over the past half dozen years or so. And bank bond issuance in particular has slowed down over the last couple of years. So most of the increase occurred early on in the financial crisis, and since then it's sort of leveled out, as I'll come to in a minute. And that's as the banks have shifted to financing themselves a lot more with deposits and a lot less with bonds, so a lot less in the wholesale market. So the bank bond issuance jumped up particularly in 08 and 09 as a lot of stuff was re-intermediated from other forms of financing as they dried up into the banking sector. Since somewhere around about 2010 or so, the banks have done very little net bond issuance. But as is very clear from here, one of the areas of the market suffered the greatest hit from the crisis was asset-backed securities. Due to the loss, nothing particular to do with the Australian market and everything to do with the global market. So there was a general loss of investor confidence in those sort of securities. Had a fair bit of bad press for a number of years. They were a previous topic of Mr. Lewis a few years back before he's moved on to high frequency trading. So a lot of loss of investor confidence in this asset class globally. That spilled over to the Australian market and resulted in the stock of outstanding asset-backed securities in Australia nearly halving in nominal terms, declining threefold relative to the size of the economy since mid-2007. With that as a background in terms of where we were in 07 and where we are today, let me focus a little bit on what's happened over the last 18 months or so. So as conditions have generally improved since 2013, as we've started to come out of the first of the crisis. So there's been pretty strong issuance across a bunch of different types of bonds. The pricing is a lot tighter, so tighter means lower spreads, so lower relative to the cost of the ability of the price of the government can borrow at, or the rate that the government can borrow at, which itself is a particular fairly low levels. The other thing which has gone on since 2013 is that people have been able to issue at longer maturities. And finally, there's been issuance by lower rated companies. So rather than just the most highly rated companies, the BHPs of the world, we've seen particularly over the last year or so, a bunch of lower rated companies, so around about investment grade. So investment grade means around about a BBB+ rating, thereabouts. We've been able to see companies with lower ratings being able to borrow as well. So what's happened over the past 18 months, it's mostly, again, a global story. So the global economic recovery has become more entrenched. Some of the perceived downside risks have at least been perceived to have abated. And in particular, European sovereign debt concerns have eased. Whether or not that's justified is another question, but anyway, at the moment at least the market seems fairly comfortable with that. And that, of course, quite a bit of disruption in the bond market through global bond market in 2011 and 2012. So issuance has been generally strong. It's been met by robust. It's been both onshore and offshore. The only exception to this was in June last year when the market got a bit skittish about the prospect of Fed tapering, which caused a bit of dislocation for a month or so. And there wasn't much issuance here in the month of June. Now the tapering has actually happened and everyone decided they're quite relaxed about it, that threat to the issuance has basically gone away. And so bond market activity has resumed fairly quickly after that period, particularly in April through June last year, and continued to pace. And as I said, now the tapering is actually going on. Get rid of a fly. The market seems to be fairly settled. That's what I forgot about coming back to Canberra's flies. Don't have flies in Sydney. The past year in the Australian bond market, it's normally not on me. The past year in the Australian bond market has been most notable for the signs of improvement in investor sentiment, as I said, extending along the risk spectrum and into lower rated corporate bonds and back into asset-backed securities, which I think have been somewhat unfairly treated in the case of Australia. So by the by, no asset-backed security in Australia has ever actually failed to pay off. So notwithstanding that, and notwithstanding that, and by contrast, in the US, there are a decent number of securities which have failed to pay you back in full. Although actually, one thing, when you look at what's happened to mortgage-backed securities in the US, so yes, there have been some which haven't paid you back in full, but it was nowhere near as bad as people expected around 08 and 09. Nevertheless, Australia was unfairly tarred with that brush, notwithstanding the continued good performance of those securities here, and we've seen that market start to pick up again in the past 8 months or so. So issuance by those lower-rated companies in Australia, BBB+ to BBB- has been the strongest on record over the past year or so, and those companies have been able to borrow a much longer maturity than they had been previously. And as I said, mortgage-backed securities have had particularly strong issuance over the past year. Those trends in issuance have also been reflected in pricing. So let me run you through what I've got here. There's a few lines. like when you're having a big screen, you might be able to actually see all of this. So I've got on the left-hand panel the actual yield, so this is the rate direction that I'm running at. On the right-hand panel is the spread to the government bond yield. So a couple of things to note is, and this goes all the way, this is back to the beginning of the 2000s. So a couple of things to note is, the level of yield on the left-hand side is just absolutely low for all of these borrowers. Not quite as low as they were in a couple of years back, but still extremely low borrowing costs. And you can see that right across. So triple B rated corporates today can borrow cheaper than they could even before the crisis. Banks, which is the dark blue line, that's a regular bank bond, is considerably lower than they could, much cheaper now than they could before the crisis. State governments, which is semis, the light blue line, also basically borrowing as much cheaper than they could before the crisis, and along with the Commonwealth government, they would borrow the cheapest they have ever since they've been borrowing. So the state government's cost of finances today, even though it's come up a little bit in the last few months, or the last 6 months or so, is as cheap as they've ever been able to borrow in their histories. So that's in terms of the level of yields. You look on the right-hand side, gives you the spread relative to the government bond yield. And so you can see a few things. In 08, very large blowout in spreads as people got, there's a reflecting two things. One, people shifting to government bonds as the safest asset class, driving those yields down. So that's going in one direction. On the other hand, a lot of selling and risk aversion in anything which had any risk in it whatsoever. And you can see a big blowout in spreads, particularly lower rated corporates and or bank paper as well. You can see the state governments also experienced the widening in spreads, although nowhere near as marked as anything else. But where we are today, spreads are almost, in some cases, are as low as they were before the crisis. Yields, as I said, are much lower than they were before the crisis. So that's one sign of the current favourable state of play in the bond market today. The next one is that people are able to borrow at longer maturity. So weighted average tenor is weighted average maturity of Australian bonds. And you can see over the last year, look at the line on the top, that the government have been able to borrow at a longer maturity than they have been previously. So the weighted average on average, they're borrowing at around about 9 years at the moment. So the government, the AOFM at least, has made a concerted effort to borrow at much longer maturities over the last year or two. So they've issued bonds well into the 20 years mark, in part to establish a bond curve out. It's been a very explicit aim of that, so that there's a risk-free benchmark out there for other people to borrow at longer tenors if they want to as well. But the other thing you can see is the corporate line, the purple line, they've been able to borrow at much longer tenors as well, so up around 10 years. And the dark blue line, the banks, have also been able to increase their average maturity. So back here, the sort of worst of the crisis, banks were able to only borrow relatively short maturities. They've been able to borrow at longer maturities over the last couple of years.
I'm not going to talk about kangaroos.
Kangaroos are a foreign entity, generally some sort of government-sponsored entity. So, something like the World Bank issues a bond in Australian dollars, that's a kangaroo bond. So it's a foreign, someone from outside Australia, and it's normally something to do with some public entity issuing a bond in Australian dollars. Mostly to attract Japanese investors who like buying Australian dollars and like buying them from entities like that. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, another kangaroo issue. I would actually going to skip kangaroos and talk about bonds issued by Australia entities. So the lengthening maturity that's pretty evident here reflects over the last 18 months or two, reflects two main developments. So first of all, there's the search for yield in the current low interest rate environment. So if you want to get any sort of yield, you have to go further out along the maturity spectrum, given the normal upward sloping yield curve. So there's the overall improvement in risk sentiment, which means people are more comfortable holding bonds at longer maturity, but there's also the fact that if you want to get any get to a decent yield, that's where we have to go, is to bond maturity. So let me go through these recent issuance in a little more detail on the different classes of bonds, and start with the government. So since 2013, or since the beginning of last year, net issuance of Commonwealth government debt and semis, which is state government debt, has slowed down from the pace in recent years. So these numbers are based on the most recent budgets that we have for both the Commonwealth and the state. So the stock of public sector bonds outstanding is expected to increase to around 40% of GDP by 2617, and after that, it basically looks like, at least at the moment, is projected to stabilise at that level. So as you are no doubt or aware, that is considerably lower than pretty much every other country in the world. Beyond 2016, one thing which need to take into consideration, which AOFM and the government need to take into consideration, is that the general assessment of us and other financial market participants and the government itself, there needs to be some stock of bonds outstanding to maintain a liquid government bond market and provide a risk-free curve off which the rest of the bond market can actually price itself. So in the 2011-12 budget, the government announced that it needed to maintain a stock of government bonds at around somewhere between 12% and 14% of GDP. So if you look at CPS is getting a bit more than that over the next couple of years, but beyond that, we don't want that stock of debt to fall too far, so that there's still a reasonably liquid bond market out there for market functioning in general. Demand for Australian public sector debt has remained high throughout this period due to Australia's solid economic performance. To the extent that ratings matter, the federal government is currently one of only 13 AAA-rated sovereigns globally at the moment, which is attracting continual demand for Commonwealth government debt, particularly from official reserve managers, so central banks or sovereign wealth funds from elsewhere in the world. So that strong demand has enabled the government to lengthen its maturity profile, as I showed in the previous slide. So in November last year, the AOFM issued a 20-year nominal bond, raising about $6 billion in one hit. That was Australia's largest bond issue until March this year, where they issued a 2026, a 12-year government bond a few weeks back, which raised $7 billion in one hit. That issued last year for $6 billion, giving us some idea of the demand, was 1.5 times oversubscribed. So the $9 billion worth of bid for the $6 billion was actually issued. And 60% of that bond was issued to foreigners, a high foreign participation in that. Bond issuance by the state borrowing authorities has increasingly featured issuance of floating rate notes. So normally when you buy a bond, it's got a fixed rate, and that's what you know it is for the duration of the bond. The states have moved to issuing floating rate notes, so they move up and down as interest rate curve shifts up and down. So since around 2013, so this is bond issuance by the states. The orange part is floating rate notes. So you see, back in the day, if I go back even further, there was even less of it. Just over the last few years, the states have started issuing much more floating rate notes. So a couple of reasons for that. One, most of the state government borrowing authorities' customers, which is water boards and whatever, have sort of a floating rate yield sort of suits them as well. But secondly, the banks, the Australian banks, have to hold government bonds as part of to meet the Basel liquidity standard. And from the bank's point of view, a floating rate note, given all the bank's liabilities are floating rate and holding floating rate assets, works for the bank. So it's a happy coincidence that it works for both the states issuing the bonds and the banks buying the bonds. So just by way of background, part of the Basel liquidity standards, the liquidity coverage ratio, requires the banks to hold a proportion of their assets in what's called high-quality liquid assets. In Australia, the only high-quality liquid assets that we have, which we deem eligible, are Commonwealth and state government debt. There's not that much of it around, so make sure the banks don't buy all of that debt and therefore render the whole market illiquid, which would be somewhat self-defeating. Banks limit their holdings to around 30% of the stock on issue. So if 30% of the state and Commonwealth head-on issue. It's held quietly held by the banks. As I said, banks have a natural preference to buy floating rate notes because it matches their floating rate liabilities. I turn to the financial sector. So this graph has got a bit of stuff on it. So the black line is net issuance. So how much bonds am I issuing relative to how many maturing? Purple bars below the line are bond maturities. There's also some dark purple bits, which is when the banks go and buying back some of their debt, which has mostly been their government guaranteed debt that they're bought back ahead of maturity. The light blue bars is what you think of normally as a bond, which the light blue and dark blue bars on the top half, which is banks issuing an unsecured bond, so just a regular bond. Since late 2011, banks have also been issued these things called covered bonds, which is a claim on some part of their balance sheet, most particularly their mortgages on their balance sheet. So unlike a mortgage-backed security, which is issued in a separate vehicle off the bank's balance sheets, covered bonds are claims on the bank's balance sheets. You've got recourse. If that some part of the bond starts going bad, you've got some recourse to the bank's actual balance sheet. So they stay on the bank's balance sheet, unlike mortgage-backed securities, which go off. So since 2011, banks have been able to issue covered bonds. You can see that they've been issuing, and that's the red and the pink bit. They've been issuing a bit of that over the last few years. So gross bond issuance over the past year, so that's the bit above the line in 2013, has been about the same as the average since 2007. Roughly three quarters of the bank's issuance has been offshore, mostly in US dollars and euros. They then swap those US dollars back into Australian dollars because all their operations are basically in Australia. You can see that they got off to a bit of a flyer with their covered bonds, particularly in the first part of 2012. That issuance is slow because there's a cap on how many covered bonds they're allowed to issue. And so they need to maintain just a regular pattern of issuance so they don't exhaust all their cap in a hurry. So while there's been a reasonable level of gross issuance, you can see the black line has been at best zero or it's been negative for the last few years. So the banks are only barely issuing as much as it is maturing. In fact, a number of times over the past few years have actually been issuing less than is actually matured. And the reason why that's going on is twofold. On one side, their balance sheets aren't actually growing that fast, so total lending isn't growing all that rapidly at the moment. So they don't have that much to fund. On the other side, they've had very rapid growth in deposits. And deposit growth has been outstripping lending growth for quite a number of years now, which means they don't need as much other sources of financing to finance their issuance. So bond issuance, banks have basically, since around about the end of 2010, sometime in 2010, been comfortable with the level of bonds they've got on issue and only issuing as much as it's actually maturing. So when bond matures, they'll issue another one, but nothing more than that. And that's been very much a conscious effort on their part. So that, nevertheless, there's still plenty of demand for their bonds, but as I said, their bond programs are basically not growing for the last 3 years. If I turn to the mortgage-backed securities market, a few things going on there. One is that the average size of each deal, so the average size of each issue, has grown quite a bit over the past 18 months or so. In the early, in 2010 in particular, most of the issuance was by the major banks. Since then, we've seen much broader issuance, so a lot of issuance by the regional, smaller banks, and also a number of non-banks have come back into the market. So a number of the non-bank lenders, which were very prevalent prior to 2007, are now back issuing asset-backed securities in the market. So the volume of issuance, so the bonds have been issued at tighter spreads. And the other development which reflects the improvement in the market is the AOFM, which has been buying mortgage-backed securities for a few years to support that market, has wound down, is no longer buying at all, and in fact is selling mortgage-backed securities, given there's so much demand for it. So the issuance over the past year was actually, this is the annual issuance both in Australian dollars and non-Australian dollars over the past number of years. So a couple of things you can see prior to 2007, very strong issuance of mortgage-backed securities. A lot of it was not in Australian dollars, so in US dollars or in euros. A lot of it was bought offshore by structured investment vehicles or SIVs, most of whom don't exist anymore. So that where a lot of those bonds were sold, a lot of those buyers just aren't around anymore. They're blown up. Gone broke, basically. But you can see in 2013, so this column here, was the strongest issuance we've had since the crisis. And already in 2014, we're off to a decent start. There's at least two bonds actually out there today being priced in the market. So the issuance in 2013 was the highest it's been since the crisis. The other thing you can see is nearly all the issuance has been in Australian dollars. So very little in foreign currency. Well, actually today there's two foreign currency issues being priced. So while there hasn't been much issued in foreign currency, foreign demand, investor demand for these securities has actually been quite strong. So one thing which has gone on in the rest of the world has been almost no issuance anywhere else in the world of mortgage-backed securities. So in the US, mortgage-backed security issuance has almost dried up completely. In fact, the Fed is buying more than the number of bonds actually being issued, mortgage-backed securities being issued in the US. And elsewhere, in particular in Europe, the market there is barely going. In fact, the ECB and the Bank of England announced plans on the weekend in Washington to try and get that market going again. In Australia, the market has actually got going again. Like I said, a decent amount of foreign demand and a decent, in part reflecting confidence in the high quality of the underlying collateral of this market in Australia. So as best as we can tell, in 2013, around 40% of that issuance was bought by offshore investors. And foreign investor participation at issuance rather than buying in the secondary market is increasing. As I said, given that improvement in conditions, the AOFM has stopped buying its mortgage-backed securities. It did that in 2012. And the formal end of the program was announced about a year ago. Since the start of 2013, the AOFM has actually sold around $1 billion of its RMBS holdings, and including these mortgage-backed securities have a number of tranches. Tranches means how high you are in the credit structure. The AOFM has been able to sell all its lower rated tranches, given the strong demand for that. So deal sizes have increased. So the average issuance, average size of a deal now is around $2.5 billion. Back in 2009, 2010, you were lucky if you get more than half a billion away at a time. It's spread to the regional banks and to the non-banks. A number of small issuers have returned to the market for the first time in a number of years. And spreads are generally low. This is an incredibly messy graph, which I apologise for, but the idea, spreads are coming down. This is the main point there. And spreads for both banks and non-banks come down. I mean, to some extent, so have a look here. There's no green dots here. The non-banks didn't issue anything in 2009, so to some extent their price was zero, or their yield was infinity, so it's certainly coming from there. You can see the general downtrend in yields. As I said, off, this is relative to an interest rate itself, which has come down, so the actual issuance cost of these is as low as it's been quite some time. There's also had the first commercial mortgage-backed security issued in this in Australia for a few years, and we've seen a couple more of them again recently. So let me now turn a little bit to the corporate market. So what we've got here is split up into a few things. So while issuance in 2012 was actually pretty healthy, you can see the dark brown bit was basically was the miners issuing bonds. This was basically BHP and Rio. So BHP hadn't actually issued a bond for a long time because they had so much cash flow, they had more cash flow than they had expenditure, so there wasn't any need for them to raise any other sort of form of finance. But in 2012, they went back to the market for the first time in a while, and both them, Rio Tinto, issued some fairly large bonds. So they were most of the market in 2012, whereas last year we've seen a lot more diversification in terms of issuance by people outside the mining sector. And one of the reasons why the miners did the bond issuance in 2012, they could borrow cheaper than the banks could. So the banks would have loved to have lent them money, but the miners didn't want to borrow from the banks because they could actually borrow a lot cheaper from the market directly. That's actually still true today. It's much cheaper for the miners to just raise the money themselves than to borrow from the banks. So as much as the banks would love to have them as customers, the miners don't want. reduce their capital expenditure over the last 12 months or so, their need to raise further funding has declined, and there's led to a bit of a drop-off in their bond issuance. But really, the main development has been a pickup in other corporates, in particular, more lowly rated corporates. So what I've got, and at longer maturities. So what I've got here is splitting the market up the three periods into, so this is by BBB rated, so fairly lowly rated corporates. And what one thing which is fairly clear in the last couple of years is just how much I've been able to borrow at maturities greater than 7 years. Now, one thing to think about here is if you go and borrow money from a bank, they generally won't lend you money for more than 5 years. This is a mortgage. So for these corporates, are able to get much longer maturities by borrowing in the market than they are from their banks. The other thing you can see is a decent chunk of that is being raised offshore. So a lot of those corporates are going into the, mostly in the US market. So they're able to tap the US market on pretty reasonable terms. It's cheaper for them to do that offshore than it is onshore because there's a larger investor base. And again, they're also able to borrow at much longer terms than they traditionally have been able to borrow domestically. What's happened over the past year or so, if you look at the far right-hand bar, there's been a decent amount of domestic borrowing at terms greater than 7 years. So companies have also been able to borrow domestically at longer terms than they have been able to for quite some time over the past year or so, which again is a promising development. How much of this is going to be sustained going forward when we're no longer in a low interest rate environment where investors are hungry for yield remains to be seen, but I said that it's a healthier state of the corporate bond market as we've had in quite some time. Just while I'm on corporate bonds, one thing which is a bit of a problem in the corporate bond market is the absence of any useful pricing data out there. So one thing we at the Reserve Bank have done just recently has started on, it's available on our website, has been publishing more comprehensive measures of spreads and yields on Australian corporate bonds to covering points on the yield curve up to 10 years. So we now have a whole set of data up on our website, which gives you corporate borrowing rates from across the rating spectrum and across the maturity spectrum. And one of the things that's reasonably useful for is everyone in this room, is that most of your utilities use those rates, so your water, your electricity and whatever, use those interest rates to are a part of the input into the pricing equation for a lot of utilities. So sort of somewhat in the public good to have a representative series out there of those bond yields to help utilities regulate. Let me just finally have a quick chat about who's actually buying the bonds. So again, a little bit busy, but for each set of bonds, shows you the share which is held offshore, which is the light blue line, the share which is held by domestic pension funds, which is the dark blue purple line, the share which is held by the banks, which is the straight purple line, and then some which is held by insurance firms, and then bonds held by other a few things to note here. First of all, top left-hand corner, you can see that the share of Commonwealth government debt held offshore is around 70%. Peak a couple of years ago, just under 80%. The reason why it's come down a bit recently is not because foreigners are selling Commonwealth government bonds, they're just not buying quite as fast as the issuance is. So still being net purchases every quarter for the last 15 quarters of Commonwealth government debt is not quite as much as government's actually issued. You can also see that around one third of the state debt is held offshore. And in line with what I was saying earlier about the banks, you can see the banks hold about 40% of state government debt and about 20% of Commonwealth, 15% of Commonwealth government debt. As I said earlier, they have to hold 30% of the total of Commonwealth and state government debt. State government debt pays more than Commonwealth government debt. Not surprisingly, they hold a bit more of the states than they do. You can also see financials is basically bank debt. You can see about half of the bank issuance is held offshore, and just under 40% of it is held by other banks. As I was saying earlier, the mortgage-backed securities market, which is the bottom left-hand panel, About 50% of that is held by foreigners, about 40% by other financial institutions. The corporate debt one, I think, is also interesting. So over 80% of Australian corporate debt is held offshore. So I showed you a fair chunk was actually issued offshore, but a lot of that is then held by foreign investors rather than by domestic investors. So there's not much of the Australian corporate debt which is actually held by Australia. You can see very little is held by Australian pension funds, but that's it there. So as you may be aware, Australian pension funds don't hold a lot of fixed income generally. They just sure as hell don't hold a lot of corporate issuance. So as you can see, there's a decent amount of foreign participation in the Australian government bond market, and the Australian bond market generally, but particularly in the Commonwealth government bond market. We don't know who owns those bonds, yet we know how many of them are, yes, at least, not how many of them are held offshore, but we don't know who it is who's actually holding those. So that gives you a reasonable overview of the state of the bond market. Let me we're pretty crap at forecasting, but anyway, let me just talk a little bit about some probable and some possible future developments. So first of all, as I showed earlier, public debt issuance looks like it's going to peak in the next couple of years. The government's going to need to finance as much as they did over the past few years. So that looks like it's nearing its peak. We don't want, particularly the Commonwealth government bond market, to shrink too much further from where it is currently so that it still serves a useful purpose for the rest of the bond market. Over the past couple of years, there's been very little net issuance by the banks. That looks like that's going to continue in the near term as balance sheet growth isn't that rapid and as deposit growth continues to outstrip asset growth. We've seen decreased corporate issuance from the large miners. Now, again, as they're cutting back on their capital expenditure, that's likely to continue. So we're not likely to see much more corporate issuance from the miners. But we are seeing more issuance from other corporates. And I think that's one trend which may be likely to continue. Amongst other things, it's cheaper for a lot of corporates now to borrow from the bond market than it is from the banks. But I suppose the only thing I'm not sure about is while credit spreads are very low at the moment, we don't know how much of that is a function of the current global policy environment. So how much of that is a function of the fact of policy decisions by other large central banks around the world and the fact that there's not much yield out there and so investors are hungry for yield, and whether that's, you know, how much of this is structural and how much of this is cyclical, into those sort of policies sometimes. So as central banks gradually normalise their policies, it's not clear which way some of those spreads are going to go, whether that strong investor demand for high yield securities is going to stay there. But if I think a bit more about the corporate bond market, so in Australia, bank-based finance has been it's the dominant form of finance for the corporate sector. But in the future, we may well see the Australian financial system move to a more market-based source of finance, particularly a stronger bond issuance that we've seen historically, for a couple of reasons. So first of all, the regulatory changes have increased the relative cost of bank intermediation. So all of these regulatory changes means it's more costly for banks to do liquidity transformation and maturity transformation than it was historically. So bank borrowing is relatively more expensive. So that makes market-based sources of finance like bonds relatively more attractive for a wider range of companies than it's true historically. And so you'd expect them to respond to that change in price with a bit more bond issuance. And at the moment, at least, parts of the corporate sector can access the bond market at a cheaper price than the banks. Whether that stays around as the yield environment starts to change remains to be seen. But again, for a lot of corporates, bond financing is an option which wasn't previously either attractive or available to them. So it may well be the case that over the next few years we see bit of a shift, not necessarily a very large shift, away from bank-based finance to more market-based finance. So So hope that's given you something of an overview of the bond market. Normally, somewhat of a relatively dry piece of financial landscape, and nevertheless, fairly important. So let me finish there, and happy to take any questions that you might have on that.
Appreciate you knowing to talk about other stuff. But in relation to what you're saying about the corporate bond market, is that one of the reasons why perhaps the Australian dollar has been above the levels that the bank thinks it should be? What might happen?
So what the corporate?
The sort of the foreign demand for Australian corporate bonds. How much of that is playing out in that high dollar story? And what might happen to the way foreign investors look at lending to corporates if the dollar were to a level that perhaps was more comfortable?
So I don't think it's not the buying of the I haven't got the levels. So while a large share of the corporate bond market is held offshore, the corporate bond market is a lot smaller than the Commonwealth bond market. So a decent chunk of the inflow over the past few years has been the top left. So asset managers buying Commonwealth government bonds. So that's been a capital flow which wasn't very evident a number of years prior to that. So there's been decent capital inflow to the Commonwealth government bond market. So that's other things equal push the currency up.
On the other hand,
top right-hand corner, the banks have been issuing a lot less. So there's been much less capital inflow into bank bonds than there have been previously. So that's pushing the currency down. So, the dominant form of capital inflow over the last few years has been to fund mining investment. Not so much through the bond market, actually, just direct finance, money being brought in off the balance sheets of the big miners to pay for all the investment spending they're doing. So that's been by far and away the biggest source of capital inflow to Australia for the last 3 or 4 years now. So to the extent we're at the, those investment spending, that investment spending is starting to come off, so is that capital flow into that part of, to finance that investment likely to come down too. So there's at least one major form of financing, which is like, it's in the process of changing direction. How much that affects what happens to these other flows, obviously. That one's reasonably easy to predict. The other sort of flows are much harder. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask a million questions, which you want to answer.
Yeah.
But secondary market in Australia for bonds, it's virtually non-existent. For both of the bonds, it's zero corporate bonds.
Yeah.
Passing for years, I suppose, for the Reserve Bank to actually take part in setting up a secondary market for bonds, because it will have effect that you've got to it will reduce the interest rate. Here in Australia, also make it easier for corporates to raise cheaper money. My question is, when is the Reserve Bank going to take
we take an active interest in that, but so there's been a couple of things which happened in that space just recently. So one is the ASX has now got retail is not going to be a big part of this. The liquidity comes from institutions. But anyway, you can now buy and sell Commonwealth government bonds through the ASX, just like you can share. So that's stuck. The ASX started with CGS last year, 12 months ago now. Their intention is to broaden that out to corporate bonds as well. Part of a potential constraint around the corporate bond market is the size of the prospectus you need to have to get along with it and how frequently you have to keep updating it. And the government has been working on simplifying that. Now that, again, as you might say, is more to do with the primary market rather than the secondary market. Particularly in the Commonwealth and the states, there are designated market makers, which are banks who make the market, and that's true also in the bank bonds themselves. But we don't see that. We don't see there's necessarily a role for us in that market. As you said, the corporate bond market liquidity is pretty bad. I think depending on how the ASX initiative goes, that's one potential way to address that, because then you can actually buy and sell through the stock exchange shares, and there will be market makers providing some sort of liquidity. So that's something that we're involved in, I think, rather than using our balance sheet to do it, which causes us some problems. We do provide a liquidity backstop in at least four of those types of bonds in terms of the bonds being repo eligible. That's not true of anything by the most common corporate. It's true of those other classes of bonds. Provide some sort of, but it's not. Are we a direct market maker in these ones?
It's not so difficult institutionally. Fiji, for example, is more likely to operate the secondary market bonds. Houston's bond interest rate in the past 10 years by 6 percentage points, and yet Australia has never set up a secondary market in bonds.
No, but that's what I'm saying. The ASX is on. Yeah, no, I know. But so the question is, so is it our, you know, so we, if we're buying.
It's responsibility. It's responsibility.
I'm not sure about that. If we're buying corporate paper, then we're having a direct exposure to the Australian corporate sector. So that's, I mean, if you want to make a public policy case, that's appropriate. But then that.
No, I'm not saying manipulate the act in the market, just physical.
No, but as you said, that's what the ASX is in the, it's one way down the path of actually developing, or has to serve there for CGS. They're very much intending in the near future to broaden that out to the corporate space as well. So it says there's been more progress there in the last 2 years than probably has been in the previous.
There was a paper last week from JP Morgan suggesting that the decline in bond yields worldwide is creating conditions for the great moderation to reassert itself in the world, so that volatility in all bond markets reduces, as indeed macroeconomic volatility reduces. Do you see, interested in your comment on that thesis, and also do you see that creating the conditions for the carry trade to redevelop as a significant factor in the Australian bond market?
Let me ask the question. So I'm not sure that we've seen the end of volatility. I'm guessing that around about this time next year, if market forecasts of future Fed policy actions are right, you might see a bit of a pickup in volatility. So I would be loath to declare the end of volatility quite at this point. So while we may see an improvement in macro outcomes, we haven't. My guess is that when short-term interest rates are no longer at zero in the US, a few things might get flushed out. Let's see where we are in 18 months' time, and I'm guessing volatility. So volatility is low at the moment, that's true. I'm not so confident that we saw a burst of volatility this time last year when the concerns about Fed tapering first emerged. My guess is, though, when we actually see short-term interest rates actually rise, volatility is probably going to pick up. I'm guessing there's a few financial structures out there which are predicated on the fact that the borrower is zero, or near zero. Probably not going to survive. You know, get a little miss. So I wouldn't say we're going to enter another period of very low or compressed volatility. Beyond that, there's a lot of, you know, or something like that. as well. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I mean, to the extent in terms of capital flows, I mean, an environment of lower volatility means people are more confident. You don't have to worry so much about the volatility around that. I'm not sure that we're necessarily the most obvious destination for that. Right? And we're seeing over the last few months was there a resumption of capital flows to emerging markets again. So it's not clear that we're not the most favorite destination.
Would that be a factor pushing the dollar higher over the last few months?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no explanation for what the currency's gone up, so I'm not sure. Yeah.
You mentioned that currently bond rates are historically low, but the latest issuance was heavily oversubscribed. It seems to me there's a little bit of a conflict there that people are. And to the extent that it's typically subscribed, why would they be doing this? Is it based on their expectation that other forms of higher rates return just too
risky? Well, no, I mean, I think, so yields being driven low right across the spectrum because people, I mean, if you're going to get, particularly, say, in the US, if you're all you're getting for investments out of sort of 6-4 month horizon is zero, and you're after some sort of yield, then you'll move. So the only way you can get yield is to move further out along the maturity spectrum, further out along the spectrum. You have to do one of those two things. You want to pick up yield. As more and more people are doing that, it's pushing those yields down as well. So I said, how much of that is likely to survive when we're no longer in a zero interest rate environment? David's question.
Yeah, this, so I saw that most of the Australian funds are issued
offshore. Oh, offshore, yeah. Yeah.
I think we get the Australian savings under close and Australian
No, because so Australians don't hold much fixed income, but on the other side, Australian pension funds invest a lot offshore. So our net, we hold more offshore equity than Australians hold equity in Australia, than foreigners hold equity in Australia. That happened for the first time ever in the last year. So Australians hold more equity offshore. So there's a difference between what instruments people hold. We hold more equity than foreigners hold equity in Australia. But on the flip side, they hold more of our bonds than we hold more of their bonds. But at the moment, but the net of that, you know, the net of savings investment is the current account. And yeah, the current account is indeed still in deficit, although it's as small as it's been today, 35 years. So yes, we hope we save less than we invest, but that's partly because we're just coming off from like the highest level of investment as a share of the economy we've ever had.
So really, the time of the is still. And over time, as this becomes real, important.
No,
at the time for Australia to think of providing some incentives to the savings
So, as I've said on any number on a few occasions in the past, I'm not. I mean, if you look at Australia's stock of foreign liability, which is the accumulated stock of the flows we're talking about, so they're actually declining. They're declining as a share of GDP at the moment. The current and any reasonable prospect that's likely to continue going forward is the current account deficit shrinking. It's now below the level, so it's below the level which would stabilize the stock of foreign liabilities. The stock of foreign liabilities are actually coming down. So that dynamic has been true for mid late 80s, has started to turn around over the last. 6 or 12 months, and it's not possible for what it's likely to continue. So, I mean, we're given the structure of our economy where there has been a need for a lot of investment, particularly in the supply, then it makes some sense to find some of the offshores it does. I'm not sure that this is necessarily a problem.
I'll ask one final question.
Sure.
When do you think the US American bond market will collapse?
So I don't know. I don't think it's going to collapse. Do I think yields will go up at some point? Yeah. Will that transition from the yield we've got today to a higher yield be a little bit messy at some point? Yeah, I'd be surprised if it wasn't. Historically, that's generally been the case.
I don't know. The only thing which would generate very rapid, pick up volumes, I think, is concerns about inflation emerging. At the moment, they're not there. If anything, it's concerns about the opposite. So, on the day when those fears start to re-emerge, it's likely to be the day that happens. Good. Well, thanks very much for those questions.